Well, life's full of judgments. You walk into a networking event, or you work into an event for, you know, associates, the associates of engineers, and we all make a bunch of snap assessments. So you walk in and you see this man standing in the corner, and you think to yourself, I'll talk to him when I've run out of other people to talk to, just because it'd probably be hard work. And then you see this young lady standing over in the other corner, and you think, I'm going to talk to her, not at all, because I'm a married man, in my case. Okay, we make judgments all the time. You know, there's nothing wrong with judgments, right? You look down a dark, nasty alley and you think, I'm not going down there. You see some guys selling some stereos out of the back of a truck, and you think to yourself, that looks like a good legal buy. I'm sure there'll be a warranty that comes with that. So we make judgments all the time. So judgments are okay, but what's with judgmentalism? What's the difference? Well, I've been thinking hard about judgmentalism and trying to work out, what defines it. I think it occurred to me it's a little bit like what a famous judge said about pornography. He said, it's hard to define, but you know it when you see it. Well, when you've been judged, you know it, you feel it, don't you? When someone's being judgmental towards you, you know exactly what that feeling is like. So what's the difference? Well, I think the difference between making a judgment and judgmentalism is that you see the difference. You note the difference, but then somewhere along the line, a value is attached to that difference. So the difference in behaviour, dress, clothes, number of piercings, actually moves from seeing an assessment about difference to an assessment about valuableness or status. Now, the core thing is that usually the person who's doing the judging is assessing, I think, on a single criteria, aren't they? It's usually the person doing the judging is assessing on a one criteria, that's part of the problem. And usually that single criteria is what? Well, it's morals. And the problem with that is that the person doing the judging is deciding what that criteria is. They are deciding not, objectively what is moral, but according to themselves what moral is. And the topic is that Christians seem to be, very good at this. And if you know anything about Christianity, that actually ought to be pretty bewildering, because Christians follow Jesus, right? And Jesus was renowned for what? Love, compassion, kindness, empathy, forgiveness. And yet, Christians, and some would say not just some Christians, but lots of Christians, are renowned for being judgmental. Gandhi said this about Christians, I like your Christ, I do not like your Christians. You Christians are so unlike your Christ. And that, captures the problem for a lot of people. So why are Christians so judgmental? Why are Christians so judgmental? Well, the answer is in a story that Jesus tells in which he hammers judgmentalism. It's actually, I don't know if you got the outline when you came in. Matt, do you want to jump up and grab a bunch of these outlines? I think a bunch of people missed them when they came in. So the answer about, why Christians are so judgmental, I think, is in this story that Jesus tells, that he actually attacks judgmentalism. So this is from the New Testament, part of the Bible, written after the life and death of Jesus, and written by Luke. Luke wasn't someone who followed Jesus around, but at the start of his biography about Jesus, Luke's Gospel, he says that he carefully talked to all the eyewitnesses, not all, but he carefully talked to eyewitnesses and made certain of the things that he's talking about. So Luke establishes that he's talked to people who saw this and heard this, but he himself didn't see it. And so he records this story that Jesus told. I'll read it out for you, starting at sentence 9. To some who are confident of their own righteousness and look down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. It's all happening over there on the left. So Jesus actually identifies the core problem for us when he's talking about the Pharisee. The Pharisee is the religious guy. He's the religious guy. Even in his own culture, 2,000 years ago in ancient Israel, he was very religious. So, you know, we're not a particularly religious culture, but even back in his time, which was a much more religious culture, he was very religious. You can see that he's very devoted. Look at sentence 12. He fasts twice a week. So he religiously goes without food from sunup to sundown twice a week. The requirement at most is one day a week, but even that is not clear. And then you really know he's religious because it hits him in the back pocket. He gives away, see what he says, he gives away a tenth of all he gets in sentence 12. A tenth of his income. He's pretty religious, he's pretty moral. But actually Jesus exposes the problem for us. See what he does? He moves himself into his own category, a category of one. Look what he says there. He's the kind of guy who, when he combs his beard in the morning, I reckon he would have said to himself, he's looked in the mirror, if only I was a little more, if I had a little humility, I'd be perfect. Because look what he says. Sentence 11. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. See what he does? He creates himself in a category of one. He says, God, I thank you that I am not like anyone else. I'm not like any other person. And then just to make clear that he's in an exceptional category, he says, like robbers, evildoers, and adulterers. I'm different. I'm not like the rest of humanity. And how does he define the rest of humanity? As scum. Adulterers. Evildoers. Robbers. But he doesn't have to resort to scum. He says, or even like this tax collector. Now, tax collectors had a dubious history, but they're not the same as robbers. They're not quite the same as adulterers in ancient Israel history or evildoers. But he says, look, even that guy back up the back of the temple, I'm not like other people. I'm better than even him. He puts himself in a category of one. And I reckon this is the heart of judgmentalism. That people somehow see themselves as different than the people they judge, somehow above them, somehow in a separate category so you can look down and think, I'm not like other men. I'm smarter. I'm a better dresser. I'm more politically aware, which is why, you know, during the global financial crisis, I wasn't fired and you were. I'm better than them. Now, we all do it, don't we? Not just Christians, but all people do it. I forgot to bring my little slip of paper along, but there's a guy who sells the Big Issue magazine. He used to sell it up on King George Square. He now sells it near the post office, the GPO post office. And his name's Grant. And when you buy a Big Issue from him, he gives you a little slip of paper. Let me read out to you the first sentence or two of his little slip of paper. I was going to bring it along as a kind of visual aid, but I lost it in the rain. This is what it says. A little note from Grant, the polite guy. Thank you for buying from me. Every bit helps. I wasn't always like this. I'm just down on my luck at the moment. Why do you think he has to have that little phrase in there? I wasn't always like this. What's his expectation of people buying the magazine from him? Yeah, that they're going to look down on him. It's endemic. But we're not having a go at the general culture, we're having a go at Christians at the moment. So why is it so bad with religious people or moral people? Well, Jesus points the problem out, why it's so bad for religious people or moral people. Look at sentence 9. To some who were confident of their own righteousness or moralness or uprightness and looked down on everyone else. Confidence in their own righteousness. Confidence in moral goodness. So confident in moral goodness that we, including myself, those of us that are Christian, look down on other people. So how does that happen? I think what happens for Christians are people who read the Bible and read what it is that God desires and somehow move from understanding what God desires to thinking that we understand well what God desires to actually doing what God desires. We might not, but in our heads we move from knowing what God desires to thinking that we meet those criteria. That's the only way I can think that someone who's Christian could in their head start to look down on other people. That's how I think it works. You see, but we have no right to. 2010 started with a scandal. Where are we? Category of one, we're past that. 2010 started with a scandal. Let me tell you a bit of story. 2 years ago, a woman caused an outcry when, during a BBC radio interview, she described homosexuality as an abomination and suggested that gay people could be turned around through counselling. A few days later, just to prove that that wasn't enough off-the-cuff remark, she reiterated her views, telling a TV interviewer that just as a murderer can be redeemed by the blood of Christ, so can a homosexual. Gay rights activists accused her of inciting hatred, scores of complaints were made, even statements were lodged with the police. So who was this judgmental woman? Does anyone know? Have you all missed this? You must have been on holidays when the scandal of 2000, the first scandal of 2010 erupted. Well, it was Iris Robinson. There she is. She's married to one of the MPs in Ireland. She gave $80,000 to a 19-year-old man, Kirk McCambley, so that he could start a cafe. Obviously not him. That man is her husband, whom she did not give $80,000 to. So he could start a cafe. And at the time, 2 years ago, that Iris, though this is what's been exposed, Iris, when she was calling one area of sexual conduct a problem, she herself was failing in another. Because 2 years ago, up until the present day, she was the lover of Kirk McCambley, the 19-year-old man. So she was committing adultery with Kirk. And yet, she was, I guess, inciting judgment. It's a pretty interesting story. But it's not just there. I read of an interview recently with a young woman who said this. Before my friend became a Christian, you could talk to him. It was normal. He became a Christian after he met a girl and then through her got converted. But after his conversion, you couldn't talk to him anymore. Every conversation was about condemning something about my lifestyle. All he did was kept telling me all the things I was doing wrong. I shouldn't be smoking. I shouldn't be drinking. He didn't like the way I dress or the music I listened to or... her name was Mara. Now, I get this, don't you? This would turn you off Christianity and off the church, and rightly so. See, the reason that Christians are judgmental is because of a failure in our Christianity. Those of us that are Christian are judgmental have forgotten what's at the heart of being Christian. Or we never understood it. See, the problem with judgmental Christianity is that it's a failure. It's a failure in Christianity. Christianity is not about being good. Christianity is about begging God for mercy. It isn't about Christians having morals, but it's about having failed so badly in meeting their own moral standard and God's that they turn to God for forgiveness, became followers of Christ, and so became Christians. That's right, isn't it? That's what the heart of Christianity is. It's about a failure in morals and therefore becoming a follower of Jesus because all those failures are forgiven. See, the young bloke I referred to in that interview with Mara seemed to think that his job was identifying his friend Maya's sins, that it was drinking and smoking and her clothing. Well, there's a couple of problems there, isn't there? For instance, once again, that's the subjective thing. You look at the scriptures, look at the Bible, drinking's not actually condemned. Drunkenness, maybe, but not drinking. Smoking's not condemned. There's no comment on clothing. You could dress like an emo if you wanted, still be Christian. Or you could dress like an emo full stop. I don't know why you'd want to dress like an emo, but you could. See, he seemed to think, this young guy, that Christianity was a bit about getting someone to stop sinning. But that's not what it's about. The core of Christianity says that what matters most is coming to Jesus and God. Jesus first, everything else second. So if this young bloke had a job, it was to love and care for his friend Maya, and maybe, if she was interested, share who Jesus was and how that had changed his life. See, when Christians are judgmental, we fail to understand Christianity. But see, that's not just me saying that. Now, my wife said to me, don't use this language. But I would go so far to say when Christians judge others, they're being sub-Christian, less than Christian. See, Jesus taught that absolutely no one can be confident of their own righteousness. No one can be. Jesus teaches that not a single person can say to any others, I'm morally better than you. And Jesus makes it pretty clear in the story he tells. Look down at sentence 13. This is part of Jesus' story again. But the tax collector, he's not a good person even in that society, stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And what does Jesus say? I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. See, hear the ending. The guy says, God, I suck. Morally, I suck. I need your mercy. I need your forgiveness. And he's got no confidence in his moral standing, has he? He won't go, the temple's the holy place. He won't go into the temple. He stands right at the back. He won't look up to heaven. He won't, as it were, meet God's eye. And look what he does. He beats his breast, his chest in despair, anger, frustration, self-loathing. He's deeply ashamed. He has no confidence in his goodness. None whatsoever. And yet what does Jesus say about him? Look at that sentence 14. I tell you that this man, this tax collector, rather than the other one, went home justified before God. Now that word justified is fantastic, right? Because what Jesus is saying, it's now as if this guy had never ever sinned. He was right before God. So when he went home, Jesus is saying he wasn't just right with God for that moment when he beat his breast and was sorry. He wasn't just right with God as he confessed. But from that point on, he was right with God. When he went home and was sitting around and sharing an Israelite meal, he was right with God. When he got up to work the next day, he was right with God. If he got hit by a donkey in a cart when he crossed the road, he was right with God and would have gone into God's presence in heaven. Justified. Accepted by God. Full stop. End of contract. Why? Because he called out to God. But you might be sitting there thinking, well, don't we need a little bit of judgment? Don't we need just a little bit of judgment now and then? Well, it's true. I was reading about a story on the ABC website where a guy is trying to get a contract to export cane toads to Japan. Cane toad skins and cane toad venom. He's trying to get it exported, not to Japan, to China. He's trying to get a contract for several million dollars. But, see, he won't listen, this guy, he won't listen to a bunch of experts that are telling him that actually he's got the wrong cane toad. See, the cane toad that we've got in Queensland is the Bufo marinus. The cane toad that the Chinese want is the Bufo gagazians. So, just because you can hit a cane toad with a golf club doesn't mean that the Chinese want it. You need a little bit of judgment. You've got to hit the right cane toad with the right golf club. Judgment's necessary. Now that's true even in Christianity. But when you look at the Bible passages about judgment, there's two probably big things to be pointed out. And if you're a Christian, I hope this is helpful for you. If you're not Christian, this is maybe ammunition to talk to your non-Christian friend about next time you feel judged. What it says is that judgment is an insider thing. Judgment is an insider thing. When the Apostle Paul, and Jesus as well, writes to people to say, this is not how you should live, He writes to Christians who are followers of Jesus and says, this is not how you should live. That's in the letter to the Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 6. And a chapter before that, Paul says explicitly, it is not my job to judge people outside the church. But you people who follow Christ, how can you live like this? So judgment, when it does happen, is an insider thing. But, and when Paul says that, he never says, any of you are better than any others, or I'm better than you, because he has an objective basis, which is the words of Jesus. Secondly, the judgment in Christianity is only on some topics. When you look at Paul's letters in 1 Corinthians, this letter to Romans, he says, do not judge each other on the insider thing, on this topic and this topic and this topic. They're not central. They don't matter. These are the things to be worried about. Those things, don't get worked up about them. They're not central. Now, let me conclude, and there's going to be a question and answer time. Let me conclude by saying, look, if Christians, if you're not Christian, and Christians have put you off God, don't worry about it. Can I say, don't worry about them. Don't worry about what they think about you, or if they sneer at you or look down at you. This passage says that Jesus condemns their, my, our self-righteousness, and that he'll actually have probably some serious words to say with us when we meet him in heaven. Serious words. Look at that last sentence. The very last sentence, part of sentence 14. Jesus says this, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. So the Christian who raises himself up and looks down on other people will be humbled by God. So don't let someone who's Christian, who's judged you, put you off from God. And remember, I guess, the outcome of the story. See, the one who was self-righteous and self-confident and self-assured did not receive mercy. There's another reason, I guess, not to be put off God. The reality is that some of the things that all of us have done have displeased God. And some parts of the Bible are pretty clear. There is actually a moral standard that God has. It's called his holiness. And it actually does matter. And we haven't talked much about that in the story, but it's actually implicit. Can you see how it's implicit? Because the tax collector said to God, I need your mercy. He knew that he had failed maybe to meet his own moral code and failed to meet God's moral code. And that's why he asked for mercy. Now, God does actually have a standard. And when you read across the Bible, some things are debated, but it's pretty clear in a lot of places what God expects. But you know what? The guy who asked for God's mercy got it. Look at that last sentence again. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. I think that's pretty amazing. Now, I want to apologise here to say, and to people who are going to hear this recording, I've been judgmental. I'm sorry. In my zeal, I guess, as a young Christian, I came across judgmental to my friends and family, and I'm sorry about that. I came across judgmental in some areas because it was actually easier for me to talk about individual areas of someone's life that I felt like would have been good to be changed, but not because I thought I could impose my moral standard, but actually because I was too embarrassed and found it too hard to talk about Jesus. It really mattered. And so I kind of went for the easier thing, which was the worst thing I could have done. I'm sorry to my friends and family that I've done that. I think Christians in their passion to try and communicate to other people, you know, what matters to them and maybe their love for other people, they can see this area of life and they know that it displeases God and they, you know, according to their understanding of the Bible, they want to kind of communicate that do come across in judgmental and are judgmental. And so, yeah, I'm sorry on behalf of other Christians, and let me say, I'm sorry myself. And I ought to be, because Jesus thinks that people who are judgmental and are self-righteous are failing in their Christianity. Failing in their Christianity. And, you know, we might not be Christian at all. Because someone who's judgmental, Jesus says, is someone who's confident in their own righteousness. Therefore, it's not someone who looks to God for mercy, but they look to themselves and their own moral standard. The Bible teaches that everyone needs God's mercy. Not a single person can avoid the need for God's mercy.